Blog Talk Radio.
People, what is going on? Okay, so as I talk to you here, doing our little intro thing, I am stapling some stories because I am that prepared, y'all. So I got some stuff on Mike Pence today. Maybe you've already seen this story. It's been out there for about a day or two already, but my goodness. Mike Pence, Donald Trump apparently rips this guy a new asshole on a regular basis behind the scenes and pokes fun at him. Except the jokes that he's telling about Pence are not funny. They're not funny because they're kind of true and they're really fucking scary. Trump did a press conference with Mitch McConnell yesterday and they discussed tax reform and other issues. And, you know, Trump contradicted himself 1,000 times. Trump basically lied to everybody's face when it comes to pharma drugs. There's a million different angles to that, and we're going to cover all million different angles to it because it is something else to witness. And then the classy cast over at Fox News decided to discuss the gutting of Obamacare, and good googly moogly. Do they have some odious opinions? All right, let's get started here. And we will do that with the story about Mike Pence after I take a little sip of my drink. NBA opening night tonight, for those of you who give a shit, which I don't know. I should poll the audience here. I did this on Twitter yesterday with a character limit. I polled everybody as to what they think the ideal character limit would be on Twitter. And I said 140, which is the old school, 280, new school, and then I added 150 and 200, just because there were four options. And 141, that's what won, 140. So people are liking the old school better than the new school. I definitely hate 280 characters. I go to Twitter to read, like, pithy little jokes or little factoids. I don't go there to, you know, get into every nook and cranny of somebody's mind or read some short essay on some topic that the person probably doesn't know dick about anyway. But my preference would probably be 150. I'd probably up it from 140 to 150 because it happens to me a lot. I don't know if it happens to you, but whenever I'm coming up with something that I think is a fire tweet, I'm always like, I always need like one or two more characters. There's always that, fuck, now I got to try to figure out if I can eliminate some shit like apostrophes here or there, or if I change a Y-O-U to just a U, like you gotta. So if you give me 10 more characters, I'm good, man. I'm good. But definitely don't double the character limit. That's too much. I find myself like giving up on tweets when I'm halfway through them with people who already have the 280 characters. But I should poll people on other stuff too. Yeah, I should poll. I wonder which sport my audience is most interested in. Is it the NFL? Is it the NBA? Is it the MLB? I'd be very interested to see that. Maybe I'll do that. Sorry, I'm just thinking out loud here. I'm supposed to be doing a show, aren't I? Isn't this a show that I'm supposed to start talking about important stuff? Okay, so here we go. Let's dive in. The New Yorker has a long piece on Mike Pence, and it includes some insider information from the administration. Now, we're not going to go through all of it. A lot of it is stuff that we already know, or at least we've covered on the show previously. For example, he was a cancer truther or a smoking truther. So he used to argue that, well, we don't really know if smoking cigarettes causes cancer. Did you know that some people who smoke cigarettes don't get cancer? So yeah, maybe it's that cigarettes don't cause cancer. And then, of course, you look back and he took money from Big Tobacco, so he's a slimy, sleazy motherfucker. By the way, that would have been like strike one, you're out, in a world that made sense and in a system that made sense, that wasn't deeply corrupt. Like, really? So you're on record as saying you don't know if smoking causes cancer, and you took money from Big Tobacco. That's it. All your credibility's gone, and we'll see you later. Go get a job in the private sector doing something. Don't fucking, what, you're going to be a politician after you were caught brazenly lying? Nope. He has given speeches on the floor of Congress back when he was a congressperson where he spoke about how he doesn't believe in evolution and creationism is true, and we should teach that alongside evolution. He dedicated his career to Rush Limbaugh. And the article goes into even his childhood and gets into what it was like in the Pence household and yada, yada, yada. So it's actually a very interesting article, and I recommend you go read it all. But there's a few parts of the article that blew up, and they blew up for understandable reasons. So here we have, this is a piece from the Huffington Post highlighting the parts of the article that I want to share with you. They say the article entitled The Danger of President Pence details various viewpoints held by the socially conservative vice president that clash with Trump's. Two sources told the magazine that Trump has teased Pence about his positions on religion, abortion, and the LGBTQ community. Quote, a longtime associate of Trump and Pence was quoted in the article saying that the president likes to let the VP know who's boss, and that Trump asks people who stop by Pence's office, did Mike make you pray? What? Okay, so somebody will go see Mike Pence, and then they'll go meet with Trump. And Trump will joke around and be like, would that guy make you pray over there? What a goofball. Now, that's something I would say and something I would do if indeed I had somebody, I don't know why I'd have a fundamentalist in my administration. I wouldn't. But yeah, I would be poking fun because that's preposterous, and he is, a Kool-Aid drinker. He actually believes it. He has this stupid rule about, for example, if there's alcohol involved, he will not meet with another woman. He needs his wife to be there. If there's alcohol involved and there's a meeting, even if it's a business meeting with another woman, doesn't matter. Not going to do it, not going to take the meeting because there's alcohol involved and there's another woman. I don't believe in that. So Trump sees that this guy's a real fundamentalist, and he laughs at him, and he pokes fun at him. Now, again, that's something you or I might do. Did he make you pray? But Donald Trump is the guy who ran, and he was telling all the evangelical Christians, I am with you. Tremendous. Believe me. I'm on your side. He went and he gave a speech to Liberty University every 3.5 minutes. These are the people that shored up his campaign. These are the people who don't abandon him even now with his poll numbers tanking. These are the people who he runs to get their approval when everything else is looking shitty. He just gave the speech at the Values Voters Summit. That's these people. So what happened, Trump? It's almost like you're a fucking con artist and you're scamming people, and your target here is the most gullible people in the country who you know can lend you just enough support to get you over the top in elections. And that's exactly what this is. So he's poking fun at Pence's religiosity when he was, pretending the whole time, like, yes, I am so religious. 2 Corinthians walk into a bar. Remember that, 2 Corinthians? Okay, let's continue. A longtime associate of Trump and Pence was quoted in the article. Oh, okay, I already did that part. Hold on. After a legal advisor told Trump and Pence that many states would probably legalize abortion if the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, Trump was said to have turned to Pence. You see, Trump asked Pence, you've wasted all this time and energy on it, and it's not going to end abortion anyway. Wow. So this is something you and I can be happy about because it shows that Trump is not committed to a socially conservative agenda where he's like, yeah, number one on the list is get rid of abortion. Now, there's a lot of people, again, who voted for him who believed him when he said he's against abortion and that he cares about this issue and that he'll fight for the so-called pro-life people on this issue. But here he's showing his true colors. He's turning to Mike Pence and saying, "There you go. You're fighting Roe versus Wade. If we get rid of Roe versus Wade, there's still going to be many states across the country that legalize abortion anyway." So he's basically saying, like, why are you wasting your time? Let's move past that. Okay, again, you and I can be happy about that because it shows he's not committed to far-right, socially conservative causes, at least on the front of abortion. But everybody who voted for him should look at this and go, what? So every evangelical, and there were many of them, who picked Trump over Ted Cruz, you fucked up. Because Ted Cruz actually believes this shit. Ted Cruz will actually fight for your position. Donald Trump will not. And he's making that clear here. But it gets better. When that meeting shifted to discuss gay rights, according to the article, Trump pointed to Pence and joked, "Don't ask that guy. He wants to hang them all." Pence's press secretary, Alyssa Farah, told Washington Blade reporter Chris Johnson that the New Yorker article was filled with unsubstantiated, unsourced claims that are untrue and offensive. It was unclear whether Farah's statement specifically addressed Trump's joke. Okay. So I added that last part just so you know that the administration is denying it. Of course they deny it. They deny every leak that comes out of there, even ones that are just so clearly, obviously, over-the-top accurate and correct. But wow. So in meetings with other legal experts discussing whatever variety of issues they're focusing on that day, when it gets to the issue of gay rights, Trump turns to Pence and is joking with the other guy in the room and goes, "Don't ask that guy. He wants to hang them all." Okay, that's scary because it's not true that he wants to hang them all, but he doesn't want them to have any rights. So Mike Pence, for those of you who don't know, was most known before he was picked to be VP. He was most known for being an anti-gay extremist governor in Indiana. So, for example, one of the things he did, he signed a piece of legislation that made it so that businesses can legally discriminate against the LGBTQ community. So if you're a business owner and you find out, hey, my employee is gay, it is perfectly legal for you to say, I'm firing you because of your sexuality. It makes me uncomfortable. So now I'm firing you. If you're a gay person and you go into a diner after your car broke down and you had to hike 2 miles to get to the fucking diner to get some food and you're starving, it is perfectly legal for that diner owner to say, you look a little effeminate, I'm uncomfortable, get out of my store. We don't serve your kind around here. Does that sound familiar? It should sound familiar. So this is how extreme this guy is. This guy was in favor of a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. A constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. So it's not just that he's not for gay marriage. He wants to put it in the Constitution to say gay people can't have the same rights as straight people. So he is massively anti-gay. Trump knows this. Trump's joking with him about it. Could you imagine same context, but on the issue of race? If you know, Trump was saying to Pence, "Don't ask this guy. He wants to kill all the blacks." Man, that sounds disgusting, doesn't it? Or if that was the case with anti-Semitism, "Don't ask this guy. He wants to kill all the Jews." So why the fuck did you pick him to be VP, you asshole? Why'd you pick him? He wants to kill all the gays. Remember when Trump was holding up the fucking LGBTQ flag? Oh, yes, gays for Trump. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But he picked somebody who he knows is one of the most anti-gay politicians in the goddamn country. So, again, what's the main point here? Con artist. Con artist. Speaking out of both sides of his mouth. Tells his base, "Oh, I'm socially conservative. I love religion. Nobody loves religion more than me. Tremendous. Unbelievable. Here, watch me go give another speech at Liberty University and talk about how Christians are unfairly persecuted in the United States of America, even though you're 70% of the population. Let me talk about how the war on Christmas is so terrible, even though 90% of the population celebrates Christmas. Let me play the victim for Christians and be on your side and say I'm against abortion and say all these things that you're going to like." And then, oh, shit, look at that. behind the scenes. He's making fun of his VP for agreeing with his base on those issues. Speaks out of both sides of his mouth. Look, I'm happy that Trump apparently is not committed to socially conservative ideas. I'm happy about that. But also, it shows how much of a standard politician he is that he did this. Because what he did is lied. You know, we all got on Hillary Clinton because Hillary Clinton picked it like a right-wing, VP. Picked Tim Kaine, who's pro-TPP and all this other stuff. And she did it for political reasons. She miscalculated. She really needed somebody to get the base for her. But she did this for political reasons. Why? Because she's a woman, and she felt like, oh, I need like a white male moderate to be on the ticket because, you know, hey, if people will feel like if they vote for a woman, that's too extreme. So you don't want like two women on the ticket. God forbid you pick Elizabeth Warren. That's too much estrogen. This is what she was thinking and her campaign was thinking. This is all politically calculated. So it's got very little to do with ideology and what your beliefs are. It's got more to do with playing politics. Trump did the same goddamn thing, except the difference is Trump played politics and served his base. Hillary played politics and snubbed her base. But the decision is totally political because Trump doesn't agree with the social conservative ideology, but he picks somebody who's as extreme as it gets on those issues. So just know you're being played if you're a Trump supporter. You're 100% being played because he's poking fun at the religiosity of his running mate. Now, I'm happy Trump doesn't believe these odious things, and he really has no beliefs on these issues, but all he is a con artist, and it's all about amassing more power, and it's all about trying to play the game right. The guy who claims to be the ultimate non-politician is the biggest politician. And this shows yet again, he's vapid, he's vacuous, he's empty, and it's all about serving himself and trying to get himself more power and keep himself in power at this point. And it's not about having real beliefs and pushing for a real agenda that helps the people. Okay. Now, we move on. My glasses are giving me a hard time today. I'll put them back in the contacts. Every time I take them out, it's usually because I got something going wrong with the eyes. Like I got a shitty, sore feeling or whatever. Because I wear the night and days, and I wear them for a while. And then after a while, it starts to feel like shit for whatever reason. So I take them out for a few days, and I put them back in. But yeah, the glasses are giving me a hard time today. Okay. Ken Klippenstein and Paul Gottinger, however you pronounce that, Paul, I apologize. They're two journalists for the Daily Beast, and they have some new numbers for us when it comes to Donald Trump and the Saudis. Buckle up for this one. Despite campaign promises, arms shipments to Saudis skyrocket under Trump. As a candidate, Trump claimed Saudi Arabia was behind 9/11, but in the first 8 months of 2017, the U.S. has delivered a total of $1.56 billion worth of arms to Saudi Arabia. Candidate Trump went as far as saying twice in one day in February of 2016 that Saudi Arabia was behind the 9/11 attacks. Behind the 9/11 attacks. During the presidential debates with Hillary Clinton, Trump admonished the Clinton Foundation for receiving contributions from the Saudis, saying, "These are people that kill women and treat women horribly, and yet you take their money." Since then, Trump has allowed more than $1 billion worth of arms to be delivered to Saudi Arabia, according to a new analysis of U.S. Census Bureau export data conducted by the Daily Beast. In the first 8 months of 2017, a total of $1.56 billion worth of arms have been delivered from the U.S. to Saudi Arabia. During this period, the U.S. has more than doubled its bombs, missiles, and ammunition deliveries to Saudi Arabia, and nearly doubled the deliveries of armor-fighting vehicles like the M1 tank when compared with the first 8 months of 2016 under the Obama administration. In addition, the Daily Beast found that the Trump administration has shipped Saudi Arabia $561 million in bombs and missiles, $503 million in armored fighting vehicles and parts, and $552 million in parts to maintain military aircraft like Apache gunships, Black Hawk helicopters, and F-15 jets for use in their disastrous war in Yemen. The total value of arms delivered to Saudi in 2017 represents a $70 million increase compared with the same 8 month period in 2016. Here's the results of that. More than 10,000 civilians have been killed in the war in Yemen. 10,000, man. 40,000 more have been wounded. More than 19 million people, which is about 80% of the population, require some form of humanitarian assistance. Saudi Arabia is blockading Yemen, keeping out food, so people are literally starving, keeping out medical aid. There's been a cholera outbreak there. So this is a country that's being cut off and starved. It's happening in front of everybody, and not only is the U.S. not against it, we are actively facilitating it, and we're on the side of the perpetrators. What happened, Donnie boy? What happened? I remember those debates. I remember covering those debates and pointing out, look, man, you can't. Trump's not wrong here when he would call out Hillary and say, here you are, you're pretending to be this feminist, you know, in reality, as I call it. It's Mick feminism when a corporate Democrat tries to pretend to be feminist. And he says, you're taking money from Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia treats women worse than probably any country on the planet. So spare me your bullshit. You're arming this regime. You're propping up this regime. The Clinton Foundation taking money from this regime. You know, it's a dictatorship. It's a theocracy. Women are forced to cover up. They need guardians. And then you're going to come out here and pretend to be some sort of progressive hero for women. Well, what about the women in Saudi Arabia as you prop up the brutal regime that keeps them oppressed? What about the women, another point, that you bomb, that you supported the bombing of? You couldn't argue against those things because he's right. He's right about Hillary and her role. But he turned out to be the biggest hypocrite on the planet. Because, yes, he did say repeatedly, Saudi Arabia is responsible for 9/11, Saudi Arabia. Now he is the biggest bitch boy to Saudi Arabia and neocons in the deep state. And that's his actions that prove it. It's not me just saying it. It's his actions that prove it. Breaking records with arms shipments. Another great piece that Ken Klippenstein did was showed the gifts that Saudi Arabia gave Donald Trump. It's just clear pay to play. And this guy has such a big ego and he's such a child that when people give him gifts and they heap praise on him as the Saudis did, all of a sudden, he melts, and he says, oh, yes, tremendous, we're on the side of the Saudis, and then look at what else is happening. If you're not serving the Saudis, why the fuck are you blowing up the Iran deal? They want that. They want that. They want that. Neocons who you used to rail against want that. Israel wants that. So you have this alliance. You're destabilizing the Middle East further, and you're doing it because it's their bidding, because they give you gifts. They heap praise on you. You send them weapons all the while you used to say they're the number one exporter of terrorism. They were responsible for 9/11. Look at how terrible they treat women in their country. Now you couldn't give a fuck. So please shut the fuck up with your, U.S. cares about human rights and democracy and freedom. Then why do we prop up and arm one of the most brutal regimes on the planet right now? And we sit by idly as they starve and destroy Yemen and massacre civilians on purpose. They've bombed schools. They've bombed schools for the blind. They've bombed open-air markets and mosques and hospitals. All the while, we keep giving them weapons, we keep giving them money, and they keep patting little Donnie on the head. So he's a hypocrite. He's a fucking hypocrite, and he can't answer for this shit. Which is why it's so important the Democrats run somebody principled. Because if you're going to have another fucking clown up there who was in favor all along of arming the Saudis as well, and is in favor of the status quo on foreign policy, then they can't effectively counter-argue with Trump. But if you have somebody who's principled, who really wants to do a realignment and who really wants to care about human rights, somebody like Bernie Sanders, well, then they can point out Trump's hypocrisy, and Trump's going to... he's going to shit the bed because there is no response. He knows he's a hypocrite. He knows he's a fucking hypocrite. You don't fucking talk about how they caused 9/11 and they treat women horribly, and then you start breaking records, sending them arms. They're a Wahhabi Salafist regime. They're a terror regime. You don't talk about how terrible they are, and then you arm them and not realize your own fucking hypocrisy. Step the fuck out of the way. It's time for Justice Democrats to take over, because we are the only wing of the Democratic Party that has credibility to talk about this. Because all our candidates say, no, we're done here. We're done here. We have a rule against arming human rights violators, full stop. Sorry, Israel, no more weapons for you. Sorry, Egypt, sorry, Saudi Arabia, no more weapons for you. We have a rule against arming human rights violators. Pretty simple, right? That's all you got to do. Hey, we have a rule, no arming human rights violators. There you go. There you go, that's it. So, you know, we're principled. He is the world's biggest hypocrite. You need somebody who's principled to point that out, or else it lands on deaf ears. So justicedemocrats.com/fight. He pretended to be anti-establishment, and then he's acting like the biggest establishment bitch boy on the planet. And now you know it. Okay. All right, let's take our first break. When we come back, I got an amazing clip of Bernie Sanders for you. Got a little throwback clip here. What he said before the war in Iraq, it is amazingly accurate. And then also, President Trump's press conference, you don't want to miss the crazy that comes out of that. Stay right there.
limbo, got you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake, so limbo, got you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left.
All right, we back, bitch.
It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
Okay, oh, this next one. Where are my clips at? Where are my clips at? There we go. There we go. Okay. I have an incredible throwback clip for you. This is Senator Bernie Sanders in 2003 explaining why he's against the war in Iraq. Listen closely to this because it really is amazing just how much he gets right in his predictions.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think any member of this body disagrees that Saddam Hussein is a tyrant, a murderer, and a man who has started two wars. He is clearly someone who cannot be trusted or believed. The question, Mr. Speaker, is not whether we like Saddam Hussein or not. The question is whether he represents an imminent threat to the American people and whether a unilateral American invasion of Iraq will do more harm than good. Mr. Speaker, in the brief time I have, let me give you five reasons why I'm opposed to giving the President a blank check to launch a unilateral invasion and occupation of Iraq, and why I will vote against this resolution. One, I have not heard any estimates of how many young American men and women might die in such a war, or how many tens of thousands of women and children in Iraq might also be killed. As a caring nation, we should do everything we can to prevent the horrible suffering that a war will cause. War must be the last recourse in international relations, not the first. Second, I am deeply concerned about the precedent that a unilateral invasion of Iraq could establish in terms of international law and the role of the United Nations. If President Bush believes that the U.S. can go to war at any time against any nation, what moral or legal obligation could our government raise if another country chose to do the same thing? Third, the United States is now involved in a very difficult war against international terrorism, as we learned tragically on September 11th. We are opposed by Osama bin Laden and religious fanatics who are prepared to engage in a kind of warfare that we have never experienced before. I agree with Brent Scowcroft, Republican former national security advisor for President George Bush Sr., who stated, and I quote, "An attack on Iraq at this time would seriously jeopardize, if not destroy, the global counter-terrorist campaign we have undertaken," end quote. Fourth, at a time when this country has a $6 trillion national debt and a growing deficit, we should be clear that a war and a long-term American occupation of Iraq could be extremely expensive. Fifth, I am concerned about the problems of so-called unintended consequences. Who will govern Iraq when Saddam Hussein is removed? And what role will the U.S. play in an ensuing civil war that could develop in that country? Will moderate governments in the region who have large Islamic fundamentalist populations be overthrown and replaced by extremists? Will the bloody conflict between Israel and the Palestinian Authority be exacerbated? And these are just a few of the questions that remain unanswered. If a unilateral American invasion of Iraq is not the best approach, what should we do? In my view, the U.S. must work with the United Nations to make certain, within clearly defined timelines, that the U.N. inspectors are allowed to do their jobs. These inspectors should undertake an unfettered search for Iraqi weapons of mass destruction and destroy them when found pursuant to past UN resolutions. If Iraq resists inspection and elimination of stockpiled weapons, we should stand ready to assist the UN in forcing compliance. I thank the gentleman.
Wow. That's incredible. And he doesn't get enough credit for being super duper spot on. So let's run through that. From the top, he says, right off the bat, I mean, this is a point that's rarely made, but it should be made all the time, which is the debate is not about whether or not Saddam Hussein is a good person. Everybody knows he's a bad person. Everybody knows he's done horrendous things. The debate is he an imminent threat to the United States? And what you found is that at the time in the lead-up to the Iraq war, the debate was flipped. The debate was flipped. And you had everybody who was for the war arguing against a straw man. The straw man being, oh, I guess you like Saddam Hussein. So, oh, you're not for this? Then I guess you're on the side of Saddam Hussein and you're pro-dictator. I guess that's what it is. By the way, you see the same script being recycled today. This is what people say to people who are against intervention in Syria. I guess you like Assad. Is that what it is? I guess you're on the side of Assad, the dictator. I guess that's what it is. No, the question isn't, hey, is Assad a good guy or a bad guy? Is he a dictator or not? Should he be overthrown or not? The question is he an imminent threat to the United States? It was the same thing with Iraq and Saddam Hussein. And very few people pointed this out. Bernie, that was the first point he made. He said, stop changing the conversation. This isn't about whether or not we like Saddam Hussein. I like Saddam Hussein. No. This is about, is he an imminent threat? And the answer to that is most definitely no, he's not. Then he goes on to say, all right, there's going to be U.S. soldiers that die. Nobody talks about that. And there's going to be perhaps tens of thousands of Iraqi children that die. That's true. In fact, there were minimum 200,000 civilians in Iraq that were killed as a result of the war in Iraq. So, you didn't hear anybody else talk about this before the war because virtually everybody was for it. But Bernie was out there saying it when it mattered. And then he goes on to say, this is another really prescient point. He goes, what kind of a precedent are we setting if we just ignore the United Nations? So, according to international law, if something like this is going to be done, that has to be cleared by the UN. The U.S. said, fuck you, UN, I'm not interested. And in fact, there was even a middle ground that was offered on the Iraq war. So it wasn't just you're either for it or against it. There was actually a middle ground, that middle ground being a bill that said, okay, we will give Bush the authorization to go to war, but only if it gets cleared by the UN to go first. So in other words, you get the congressional approval, but the congressional approval is contingent upon the UN approval. And by the way, you know who voted against even that one? Who voted against the middle path on Iraq too? Hillary Clinton. She voted for the war in Iraq. But there was Bernie. Bernie was saying, this precedent is horrendous because now we have no leg to stand on when other nations inevitably start doing the same thing. So we talk about, oh, rule of law and human rights. Well, guess what? We ignored rule of law when we thought it was inconvenient. We went to war despite the UN saying you can't do it. So now the world laughs at us when we, for example, say to Russia, when they waltz into Crimea and take it, we go, oh, my God, I can't believe you're doing this and you're violating international law. And the world looks at us and goes, you know what? Pipe down, fuckface. Okay? You violated international law in the most brazen way. So we set the precedent. We set it. And now everybody else is following the same precedent because they're going to say, well, logic would dictate. If they can get away with it, why can't we get away with it? So Bernie, 100% on, spot on. Then he says, well, look, this is going to be really expensive. Nobody talks about that. We don't know how long we're going to be there. You say it's quick. I'm skeptical. He was right about that. This is going to be really expensive. Well, don't we have things to take care of here at home? And then finally, and this is the most impressive point of all, he argues that the attack is going to embolden fundamentalists. He goes, when Saddam Hussein falls, who fills the vacuum? And if there's a civil war, the U.S. is going to be in the middle of that civil war. That is exactly what happened. That is 100% what happened. And he says it's possible that fundamentalists, jihadists, fill the vacuum. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you ISIS. That is exactly what happened. There was no al-Qaeda in Iraq until the Iraq War. It was after the Iraq War started that al-Qaeda went into Iraq. Bernie Sanders predicted the rise of ISIS all the way back then. He says, look, who's going to fill the vacuum? It could be religious fundamentalists. It could be extremists that fill that vacuum when Saddam Hussein falls. That's ISIS. That's exactly what happened. That's ISIS. That is 100% ISIS. So he doesn't get nearly enough credit, man. This is a guy who was right every single step of the way, and he's the guy who's smeared by the establishment ruthlessly to this day. And you wonder why he was the one who was able to start a movement and gets so much support behind him. And you wonder why he's the most popular senator, the most popular politician in America today. Not just senator, most popular politician. It's because of stuff like this. It's because he's accurately gauged the situation on the world stage time and time and time again, and all of his policy proposals and his solutions are common sense social democratic solutions that work in other countries and that would improve everybody's life. Okay. Now, here we go with Trump's press conference. Buckle up, I got a bunch of these. I got a lot of these to get through. President Trump did a press conference with Mitch McConnell yesterday, where they discussed tax reform and a bunch of other issues. They did a little Q&A session with the media. And he admitted something that exposes yet another contradiction from his campaign.
Thank you, Mr. President. Trey Yates, Support America News. I'd like to ask you, do you support the plan by people who previously served in your administration, such as Steve Bannon, to primary Republican candidates in the 2018 election who do not support your agenda?
Well, I have a very good relationship, as you know, with Steve Bannon. Steve's been a friend of mine for a long time. I like Steve a lot. Steve is doing what Steve thinks is the right thing. Some of the people that he may be looking at, I'm going to see if we talk him out of that, because, frankly, they're great people. What Mitch will tell you is that maybe with the exception of a few, and that is a very small few, I have a fantastic relationship with the people in the Senate and with the people in Congress. I mean, I have a – with our House of Representatives. I have a great relationship with political people. If you read the papers, you think I'm like on one island and they're like on the other. Well, it's not the way it is. We have a fantastic relationship. I'm friends with most of them, I can say, and I don't think anybody could have much of a higher percentage, but I'm friends with most of them. I like and respect most of them, and I think they like and respect me. Just so you understand, the Republican Party is very, very unified.
You just bragged about being friends with the swamp. You cuck. Yeah, I used it. There you go. Oh, man. Okay, if you guys are so unified, why is it that you didn't get any of your health proposals passed? Trump Care 1, Trump Care 2.0, Trump Care 3.0, fail, 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 fail. Why? So you're not unified, which again, by the way, the country should be happy about that they're not unified, because if they were, then we are super duper Foxville. There's no doubt about that. But look at what he's saying there. Again, see, this is such a Trump move, because Trump, his whole thing on the campaign trail was like, yeah, that's what I'm an outsider. I don't even care about having, like, in the debates, one of the moderators said to Hillary Clinton, like, oh, you have the endorsement of X number of governors and X number of congresspeople and X number of senators, and Donald, you have the endorsement of, like, none or a handful. And he's like, I don't want them. I don't want the endorsement of the people in these parties because they're corrupt. They're corrupt and they're sad. And I'm doing this. I don't want anybody's money. I'm doing this on my own. That's what I'm doing. And that's the swamp. We're going to drain the swamp, make America great again. And now that he's in office, he's like, anyway, the people in the Republican caucus, they're wonderful. They're good people. I have a great relationship with them, even though the press says otherwise. You're bragging about being friends with people that are part of an institution that has a 12% approval rating. Guys, he just doesn't know what he's doing. He's fumbling all over himself. Hillary was so bad that Trump fumbling all over himself every step of the way worked and beat her. That's how bad she is. But it just, every day it's another contradiction. It's another piece of hypocrisy. Your whole thing was you're against the establishment and against both parties. And now you're like, I'm friends with the establishment and I really love the Republican caucus. We're very unified, tremendously unified, unbelievable. You just undercut and undermine your entire fucking fucking Steve Bannon. That was his reason for backing you. Trump's a populist nationalist, and Trump is going to take no shit, especially from the elite Republicans, the establishment Republicans. He's going to buck them, too. And here Trump's going, I'm tremendous friends with the establishment Republicans. They're really unbelievable people, let me just tell you. Oh, it's so sad. It shouldn't be surprising at this point, but it still is. Because he just contradicts himself on everything. I mean, it doesn't matter what the issue is. You name the issue, I will show you Trump's contradiction. Because he has no real ideology. He's empty. He's empty. He goes wherever the political winds are taking him at the time. That's it. That's everything about him. While at the same time doing the bidding of the establishment, doing the bidding of the neocons on foreign policy, doing the bidding of Goldman Sachs and Wall Street executives when it comes to regulation. So he's doing everything the establishment wants as he fucking flounders out there in the wind. He's just empty and he doesn't believe anything. And he contradicts himself every day, multiple times. Okay. All right, now let's get to his next contradiction. President Trump spoke about his plan for Big Pharma in a press conference yesterday. This is going to surprise you a little bit. Let's watch.
And I didn't speak to Mitch about this today, but a priority of mine, and you know that this is coming up, will be the cost of prescription drugs. We're going to get the costs way down, way down. And those drug companies, so you have the insurance companies on one case. In the other case, actually, with regard to both, you have the drug companies. They contribute massive amounts of money to political people. I don't know, Mitch, maybe even to you. But I have to tell you, they contribute massive amounts of money. Me, I'm not interested in their money. I don't need their money. I will tell you, you have prescription drugs. You go to England, you go to various places, Canada, you go to many, many countries, and the same exact pill from the same company, the same box, same everything, is a tiny fraction of what it costs in the United States. We are going to get drug prices, prescription drug prices, way down because the world has taken advantage of us. The world has taken advantage of us when that happens. So that's going to be very important.
Okay, wait. You used to say this on the campaign trail. Then you got elected. Bernie Sanders proposed an amendment that said exactly that. Hey, let's make it so that Medicare can negotiate with drug companies for lower drug prices. Let's make it so we can reimport drugs from Canada, and then we'll pay a much cheaper price. You flipped on it, and you said now you're not in favor of it. They proposed it. You didn't say anything about it. So which is it, Don? Which is it? Now you're saying the same thing you said during the campaign trail, but you had already gone back on that. In fact, the reports were at the time that he met with pharmaceutical lobbyists once, and they changed his mind. So, but now you're right back to saying the stuff that you were saying before. So which is it, Don? Look, let's give him the benefit of the doubt, even though we shouldn't, but let's do it, because here's an opportunity. You know, he spends the other half of the press conference talking about how Democrats are obstructionist. It is sad. It is unbelievable. And we will fight back against these Democrats and we will get our agenda passed. But now there's an opportunity. You want to work with Democrats? Let's work with Democrats. Why don't you give Bernie Sanders a call? Because if you believe what you really said there, you want to get the prices of drugs down. We have the answers. It's not a question like, hey, what policy do we craft to try to get these cheaper drugs? No, we have the answer. And the answer is very simply, allow Medicare to negotiate for cheaper drug prices and reimport drugs that would be cost significantly less. But we're also going to break a little bit of news here today because we have an official comment, official statement from a congressperson responding to Trump here. This is from Justice Democrat Ro Khanna. And he says, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders agree. Drug prices are outrageous, and the drug companies are corrupting the system through contributions. Here is an actual chance to work with the president to get something done for the people. This would be a huge reform, and we should take the chance to do something substantive. Isn't that what people want of their elected leaders? Representative Peter Welch has a great bill on importing drugs and allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices. Mr. President, support this bill. Hey, Don, why don't you pick up the phone and give Representative Peter Welch a call and give Representative Ro Khanna a call? Because if what you just said is what you believe, let's make a deal right now. What are you waiting for? Let's make a deal right now. Or you're all talk and you don't really mean it. And you're speaking out of both sides of your mouth and you're a liar. So which is it, Don? Are you a liar? Or do you support drug reimportation? Are you a liar, or do you support allowing Medicare to negotiate for cheaper drug prices? You tell me, Don. You tell me. This is on you. So what I want everybody to do right now is go on Twitter, at Donald Trump, and tell him, work with Democrats to support the drug reimportation bill. Work with Democrats to support the drug reimportation bill. And you could add a little, hey, do you want cheaper drug prices or not? But at Real Donald Trump on Twitter, tell him, work with Democrats to support drug reimportation bill for cheaper pharma drugs. You can word it however you want to word it, but at Real Donald Trump, and you know what? Even say, call Representative Peter Welch. Call Representative Peter Welch and say, hey, he's got the bill that you just said you support. We saw the clip. So give him a call. Let's work this out. Let's make a deal. Because guess what? At the end of the day, I don't care if it's Democrat, Republican, Independent, what have you. As long as we get the proper policy in place, that's all that matters. That's all that matters. So, okay, you said you support it. Now let's make a deal. You said you support it. Here you go. Here's the bill. Drug reimportation and allow Medicare to negotiate for cheaper drug prices. Okay. All right, now let's talk about what's going on with the war on drugs. I think we actually covered this original story a while back. This is something else here. Oh, shit. Actually, you know what? I got to take my second break real quick. And then when we come back, we'll talk about what's going on with the war on drugs. And a new poll from Quinnipiac that shows, oh, my goodness, what percentage of Republicans wants to go to war? That is fucking scary to think about. But it's real, man. Wait until you see this number. I wouldn't blame you if you lost sleep over it.
It's okay that everybody ignores me when I...
you with the left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gonna grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga, left, the left. It's like I'm on an island.
All right, y'all, we back. Here's a story of what some people deal with in the American justice system when it comes to the war on drugs. A Florida man who says he was arrested after police officers mistook crumbs from his Krispy Kreme donut for methamphetamine has reportedly been awarded $37,500 after reaching a settlement with the city of Orlando. Daniel Rushing, 65 years old, sued the city after his arrest in December 2015. He had been pulled over for a traffic violation when Corporal Shelby Riggs Hopkin spotted a rock-like substance on the floor of his car. Rushing insisted the substance was just flakes from the glaze of a Krispy Kreme donut he'd eaten, but the officer wrote in the arrest report that she recognized through my 11 years of training and experience as a law enforcement officer that the substance to be some sort of narcotic. Police conducted roadside drug tests on the substance, and two of them came up positive for cocaine. According to WHAS-TV, however, the officers who administered the drug tests had not been trained properly to use them. Rushing told the Orlando Sentinel at the time he was handcuffed, arrested, taken to county jail, and strip searched. He was held for about 10 hours before being released on $2,500 bond. Okay, now, this links in directly with a story that we had covered a while back, which is, it's not just that they say, according to this piece, that, okay, the officers didn't know how to properly use the field drug test. That's what they're saying. But we covered a story about how those actually are not good. They're not reliable. How accurate they are is significantly less than you would expect. I don't know the exact numbers. I don't remember the exact numbers, I should say, because we covered the story, but I don't know if it's 60% accurate or 70% accurate. And there are false positives that are triggered all the fucking time. So this isn't scientific. That field drug test with the liquid, that's not scientific. It looks scientific, it's not. So this is what happens. This poor guy was eating his Krispy Kreme donut, driving along, gets pulled over. An officer goes, from my 11 years experience. How fucking self-righteous is that shit? From my 11 years experience, the little substance I see on the ground has got to be methamphetamine. Let's test him. Guilty. Send him to prison and strip search him. You know what would have prevented this whole thing if we didn't have the drug war? Wouldn't that be lovely? I mean, think about all the shit the cops should be doing. Hey, don't you have somebody who's committing assault or rape or murder to chase after? No, you're too busy making sure people aren't going 6 miles an hour over the speed limit, pulling them over and then throwing them in prison and throwing them in jail because they had a Krispy Kreme donut that triggered a false positive on your shitty drug test. I'm actually pissed he didn't get more. $37,500 to go through with the nightmare of being arrested and being fucking strip searched and having them tell you, no, it's drugs, and meanwhile, you know damn well it's not drugs. But as I said before, even if it was drugs, I don't give a fuck. I don't care. It shouldn't be something he gets locked up in a cage and they throw away the key for that. That's ridiculous. So here we are. We're still doing it. This is prohibition. That's what this is. You know how alcohol prohibition we had, and then after a while they had to get rid of it? So like, wow, that failed massively and made the mafia incredibly powerful. Well, that's what we have with the drug war, except with the drug war, it's drug cartels. So crime has shot up in an amazing way because of drug prohibition. That's what this is. This is prohibition. So holy shit, man. Can you imagine going through that ordeal? This poor fucking guy just had a Krispy Kreme donut. Ugh. It's almost like the system is totally broken and it needs reform the day before yesterday. Okay. Next. Quinnipiac is out with a new poll, and it has a number in it that should concern all reasonable people. So check this out. It was tweeted there by Hardball, as the MSNBC show with Chris Matthews, but it is a poll from Quinnipiac. You can see their source, Quinnipiac, October 5th through 10th. 46% of Republicans now support a preemptive strike on North Korea. 46%. Only 41% oppose it, which means a plurality of Republicans. There are more Republicans that support a preemptive strike on North Korea than don't support a preemptive strike on North Korea. This is the first time the poll has been like this. And, you know, maybe this has something to do with the Trump effect. The fact that Trump goes out there every other day, seemingly, and talks about little rocket man needs to be put in this place. You know, hey, there's only one thing that'll work. It hasn't worked in the past with Bush original, that's what he calls Bush senior, Bush original, and Clinton and Obama. It hasn't worked, what they've done. There's only one thing left. Prodding him on a daily basis, poking him with a stick. By the way, something that's never reported, but of course it would be reported if the opposite was happening. The U.S. and South Korea and Japan have been doing provocative flights with fighter jets right near the North Korean border. So now, if they did that to us, of course, or if they did that to South Korea, hugely provocative, and we would act like we need to go to war immediately. We do to them, it's called Tuesday. But nobody frames that as, you know, aggression. Nobody frames Trump saying, let's do regime change. Little rocket man, maybe it's time for you to go. Nobody says that, hey, that's aggression. It's, oh, no, we're stumbling into war. It's so, oops, accidental, whoops, did we do regime change again? The U.S. is Britney Spears. Whoops, I did it again. I overthrew your democratic government. And to be fair, in the case of North Korea, it's not democratic. When I say democratic, I'm referring to South America when we did overthrow democratic governments and put in fascist dictators. But whoops, I did it again. I overthrew your government. It was an accident. I'm just so clumsy. Sorry. Did the CIA go in there and just topple you? Whoops, our bad. It was totally accidental. But now, and see, everybody's getting the coded message, though. Nobody in the media will say, hey, the U.S. is threatening offensive war here. Because, you know, in mainstream media, U.S. is defensive by definition. It doesn't matter what we do. Oh, it's defensive. Even if they're like, we want to do an offensive war. The media is like, yeah, it's defensive. What the fuck are you talking about? Well, here, now the Republican base is getting the message. The Republican base is like, oh, preemptive strike? Yeah, I'm down. They have their Trump decoders in their mind. So they hear everything Trump's saying and doing. They're like, yeah, maybe it is time for a preemptive strike on North Korea. Now, the good news is, despite the fact that it's a plurality of the Republican Party that supports this, that's still, you know, you're still looking at what? At most 25% of the country that supports an offensive strike. So still, the overwhelming majority of the American people do not support an offensive strike on North Korea because the overwhelming majority of the American people are not nuts. But this is an instance where the plurality of the Republican Party, they're fucking nuts. Yes, you know what? I have no problem whatsoever with calling this 46% of cretins deplorable. What other term is there for that? What other term is there for that? We want to wage another offensive war. Another offensive war. How'd that go in Iraq, by the way? Yeah, whatever. There's no direct immediate threat of violence from Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein, no imminent threat. So whatever. What are we going to do here? Let's just go topple them and see what happens. $7 trillion later, hundreds of thousands of people dead later, a broken region later, ISIS rising out of the ruins later. Whoops, our bad. What do you think is going to happen in North Korea? You're going to topple this guy, and all of a sudden tomorrow, boom, they have a beautiful parliamentary system. They have five political parties representing various viewpoints, free and democratic elections. They welcome the U.S. as liberators. Not going to happen. Never going to happen. But it's almost like these guys don't give a fuck. They don't care. It's all about being gunslingers. It's all about being macho man. And if Daddy Trump is saying, yeah, maybe we topple you. Tremendous. Maybe only one thing will work. They're like, oh, yes, Daddy. Let's massacre more innocent people. These guys are terrible. I mean, there's no, yes, these how do you get through to somebody who's calling for an offensive strike on North Korea, a preemptive strike? They're incapable of thinking down the road even two steps. Like, okay, you launch on North Korea, they launch on South Korea and kill tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people. So right off the bat, your idea is stupid because you're getting tens of thousands. Even if you don't care about people in North Korea, which you should, by the way, but even if you don't, then the people in South Korea are going to get obliterated. Do you not care? They're just incapable of thinking, or they don't care. Okay, whatever, it's not me. It's not me and my family. Well, what if it was you and your family? Have you done that fucking thought exercise? What if it was me and my family, innocent, living our lives, going about our business, and some asshole foreign leader launches an attack on the guy who's our neighbor, and they launch on us because they can't reach the neighbor? What about that? If you try to put yourself in their position, of course not. Why would you do that? They're not like you. So why would you think about it from that perspective? You just want to be macho man. Yeah, let's topple that guy, and we'll feel like we're heroes, even though, according to every poll that's been done on this issue internationally, the world agrees the United States is the biggest threat to world peace. That's a tough pill to swallow now, isn't it? India and Pakistan are not the number one threat to world peace. Russia is not the number one threat to world peace. North Korea is not the number one threat to world peace. We're the number one threat to world peace. Why? Fucking this. That's why. 46% of the Republican Party. Yeah, do an offensive strike and take out this foreign government. There's no threat of violence against us. They're not going to attack us. Their fucking military budget is that of a gnat. We probably have a bigger military if we just take the military budget for the products built in Toledo, Ohio. Them alone beats the military budget for all of North Korea. But we're threatening them, and we're going to do we're threatening an offensive strike. People want to do an offensive strike in the Republican Party. They're saying preemptive strike. It's in the poll question. They're like, yeah, let's do that. It's just pathetic and gross. You can't, even in conservative parties in other nations, you're not going to get numbers like this. You know what it is? Because they've officially chugged the Kool-Aid of neoconservatism and American exceptionalism, which, as I've said before, manifests itself as a fundamentalist religion. Because the answer is always the same. I don't care what the question is. The answer is we're going to do an offensive war. I don't care what the question is. What? Oh, there's an issue somewhere that maybe could be solved through diplomacy, or maybe we could just not look the other way and have nothing to do with it? Well, no, I don't agree with that. Offensive war. Let's just do offensive war. Well, isn't that weird? No matter what, we say we're the protectors of human rights, we're the world police. Even if we're doing the offensive strike, it doesn't matter. We're the world police, we're the good guys, we're the neocons, we're the American exceptionalists. Listen, you don't get to say at the same time, and we try to do it, but you don't get to do this. We believe in equality and justice and freedom. You can't make that argument while at the same time saying we're American exceptionalists, because that's a contradiction. If you're exceptional, you're better than, you're greater than. Exceptional, that's literally what that means. So you are supreme. American exceptionalism is American supremacism, which means by definition everybody else is lower than you. So you don't believe in equality then. You believe in supremacy. You believe that you're supreme and your actions are above international law. And that's exactly what's going on here. 46% of Republicans. Rules don't apply to us. International law doesn't apply to us. When we do an offensive strike, it's magically for the right purposes. Well, look, I'm of an old school belief system. And that is, whoever does the offensive strike is by definition wrong. Because that means you're not fighting in self-defense. I'm totally on board with violence in cases of self-defense. But if it's not in cases of self-defense, look in the mirror, because you're the fucking problem. Okay. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about healthcare. And I do have a clip for you. Fox News discussed Trump's gutting of Obamacare, and the host asked a very classy Fox News-style question.
What these payments did were they paid for the co-pays and deductibles for the most vulnerable of Americans, right, those who couldn't afford it. What ends up happening here is because the law requires these insurers to pay this money is going to get paid. But in return, that money is going to be sort of deflected onto those of us who can afford to pay more for health insurance. So what you're going to do is middle-class families, small business owners, you know, working-class individuals who could barely afford to make payments in the exchange market are going to end up paying more, and that's the bad deal.
What's the motivation? If these are the poorest Americans who are getting their co-pays and things like that covered, what's the motivation for them to try to live a healthier lifestyle? I mean, if it doesn't cost them anything to go to the doctor, what's the motivation?
I give up. I give up on Fox News. I'm about to give up on the U.S. Ugh. What's the motivation? Yes, because, you know, it's not like diseases and viruses and negative things affect your health that are out of your control. Yeah, I mean, what, are you going to pay the copay for this poor person? But they got into a car accident. They were fucking sideswiped by somebody going 60, and their fucking hip is broken, and they're bleeding out internally. What, are you going to fucking pay the copay for that guy? What's the incentive for him not to get sideswiped again going that speed? Well, you're going to pay for this guy? He's got fucking colon cancer. What are you going to do? You're going to do his copay? I mean, what's the incentive for him not to get colon cancer again? This is about punishing the poor. That's what this is. Listen, they view on Fox News and the far right in general, they view poverty as some sort of moral failing on your part. In other words, in their mind, it's not possible to be working poor. That doesn't exist. Even though millions and millions and millions of Americans are working poor, even though 50% of the country makes $30,000 a year or less, they don't look at you and say, hey, that's the result of a rigged economic system. That's the result of us not living in a meritocracy. It's not that the harder you work, the further you go. Of course not. That's the result of multiple complex factors, but it's definitely the result of not living in a meritocracy. The productivity of the American worker has skyrocketed while wages have stagnated. But they look at you, if you're in that bottom 50%, and they go, what incentive do you have? What, you want health care? Is that what you want? You want to get your health care paid for without going bankrupt? Is that what you want? Well, what the fuck did you do to deserve that? Look at how they think. They don't even view something like health care, which in the rest of the modern world is a right. You get sick, you get help. You don't pay anything. It comes out of everybody's taxes. They view that and they go, what the fuck are they doing? You know, incentivize like poor lazy people to go to the doctor all the time. And what incentive do they have to not get cancer and not get malaria and not get hit by a car? They think you being poor is because you're a bad person. That's what they think. You're a bad person. You don't work hard enough. It's on you. So maybe you don't even deserve to get your copay paid for. This is the only country in the world that has medical bankruptcies, by the way. The only modern nation that has medical bankruptcies. Medical bankruptcies is a concept that doesn't exist in other modern nations. And meanwhile, what debate are we having here? You just saw it. You just saw it. Do the poor deserve health care? Do they deserve health care? I don't know. Did they work hard enough? Did they earn it? Did they earn the right to not die or go bankrupt when they get sick? I don't know. It's fucking disgusting, man. This is disgusting. Oh, can you imagine buying into that ideology? I mean, how dumb do you have to be? That's all I have to say about this one. Okay. Final story of the day. tomorrow is Kyle and Corin back for the live show Thursday. Why am I talking like this? All right, I got Trump on Hillary Clinton. President Trump prodded Hillary Clinton to run again, and he also kept slamming NFL players who are protesting. Let's see what he had to say.
In an interview earlier today, Hillary Clinton said that she did not believe that players taking the knee in the NFL was about disrespecting the flag. Complete honest with the way that you have portrayed this. You fired back in a tweet saying that you hope that she runs again in 2020. Why?
Oh, I hope Hillary runs. Is she going to run? I hope. Hillary, please run again. Go ahead.
So she's at odds with you over whether or not this is disrespecting the flag. Is she right or is she wrong?
I think she's wrong. Look, when they take a knee, there's plenty of time to do knees and there's plenty of time to do lots of other things. But when you take a knee, that's why she lost the election. I mean, honestly, it's that thinking. That is the reason she lost the election. When you go down and take a knee or any other way, you're sitting, essentially, for our great national anthem. You're disrespecting our flag and you're disrespecting our country. And the NFL should have suspended some of these players for one game. Not fire them, suspended them for one game. And then if they did it again, it could have been two games and three games and then for the season. You wouldn't have people disrespecting our country right now. And if Hillary Clinton actually made the statement that in a form sitting down during the playing of our great national anthem is not disrespectful, then I fully understand why she didn't win. I mean, look, there are a lot of reasons she didn't win, including the fact that she was not good at what she did. But I will tell you, that is something that I had just heard about. And I think that her statement in itself is very disrespectful to our country.
That's nonsense. Of course, it's not that she didn't win because of this. This literally wasn't even an issue at the time. I don't think they discussed it, did they? I don't know when Kaepernick even did his kneel at the first time. I know it happened under the Obama administration, but I don't know if they mentioned this in the debates. I mean, maybe they did, and if they did, it was just a blip in the radar because I certainly don't remember it, and I was covering this shit inside and out. So it has nothing to do with the fact why she lost. She lost for a zillion reasons, most of them having to do with the fact that she represented the establishment, she represented the status quo, and she was for NAFTA and all the deals that outsourced jobs in the Rust Belt, and she lost the Rust Belt to Trump because Trump was more populist, and that's what put him over the edge and made him win, even though he lost the popular vote by like 3 million votes. But he won the right states because he had a populist message. So that's why Trump won. Nothing to do with this. And again, what's stunning to me is how they've managed to flip the argument right on its head. Because half the time, the people on the right love to, cover themselves in the flag and say, no, we believe most in the Constitution and we believe most in free speech. Well, here you have an instance that's about exactly that. It's about free speech. It's about free expression. And it's also about protesting police injustice. So you're missing the mark if you're saying this is about the flag. They hate the flag. They'll all tell you they don't hate the flag. They're saying we are dissenting to try to make the country better. You know that old saying, dissent is the highest form of patriotism? Because they're dissenting to try to improve the country, to try to stop police brutality, the killing of unarmed people. So that's what they're talking about. Now, you never bring that up, because if you bring that up, you're going to lose that debate. So you have to say, oh, you hate the flag. And they're like, no, we don't hate the flag. This is how we are protesting to try to get action done in that realm, in that area. So all the guys who scream about free speech all the fucking time when it's some left-wing college kids who are trying to censor people or deplatform people, now all of a sudden when it's free speech for an issue they don't agree with, now it's, oh, you hate our flag. That's what it is. You hate our flag. But the most important part of that little back and forth there was what? He was like, please, Hillary, run again. Please, Hillary, run again. I'm begging you to run again. This is my message to Democrats. Don't take the bait. Because the natural urge is going to be when people hear shit like this, you know what? Fuck you. I hope she does run again, and I hope she beats you. Don't do it. Don't do it because if anybody can lose to him again, it's her. It's her, it's Tim Kaine, it's every corporate Democrat you can think of. What we need, without question, are populist leftists who take away that slight edge that Trump had over Hillary, which was economic policy, which was trade policy, which was him saying, I'm going to keep your jobs here, tremendous. He's already doing a terrible job, and his approval rating shows that. But if you run somebody who's populist left, there's no way he wins. If you run Hillary, he has a fucking shot to win again. Because she has showed no signs, none whatsoever, of learning the lessons. She's doing a tour and doing her greatest hits where she goes out there and blames James Comey and Jill Stein and Gary Johnson and Russia, and she deflects as much as humanly possible. And, you know, she refuses to accept the fact that maybe it's because you voted for the Iraq War, maybe it's because you voted for NAFTA, maybe it's because you or supported NAFTA, maybe it's because you supported Wall Street deregulation, maybe it's because you're cozy with the establishment, doesn't see it at all. So don't take the bait, man. He's saying that because he knows he actually has a shot to beat her again. He would lose to almost any Democrat who's not a total corporate Democrat, and she is exactly that. She is as corporate as it gets. What a weird fucking experience that press conference was, man. It really was. It was super weird. I saw an interesting fact yesterday that I think, like, his approval rating has bottomed out in some polls at 37%, between 32% and 37%, but it hasn't gotten lower than that. And that's interesting. So it doesn't matter what scandals have hit after he bottomed out at 32 or 37, he's just staying at 32 or 37. And, you know, my prediction was he would go lower than Bush. Bush's lowest approval rating was 22%. I'm guessing he's going to get to 21%. But I could be wrong on that, and I could be wrong on that because he has the kind of personality that can mobilize one group of people to never leave him, and they view it like a fundamentalist religion or like a cult. I've often said that about Hillary and Trump, that they effectively have cult followers because you can't like them because of their policies because they change their mind on the policies every 8 minutes. So if they've been on every side of every debate, then it's obviously the case that you're not supporting them because of that, because of the policy. It's something else. And, you know, it turns out it's probably their personality, how they make them feel, you know. Those are the voters who really get under my skin more than anything, because most Americans, I think, are relatively serious about this stuff, and they really see, hey, who do I think is going to help me more? But the people who vote just because of emotions, feelings, you know, likability, that's the worst one, likability. It's probably the most common one. Like, oh, I don't know, this person's likable. Well, did you hear the thing where they said they want to fucking, you know, throw more people in jail for smoking weed? Yeah, I don't know, but they're likable. Like, what the fuck are you, what is that? And that unfortunately happens quite a bit. Okay, I'm out of time, guys. I do have a little bit of time left, but I don't have enough time for another story. So that'll do. That'll do for today, Kyle and Corin, tomorrow. Back Thursday, live Thursday. All right. Love all y'all, and we will see you tomorrow with Kyle and Corin. Much love. Peace.